It is April 12th, 2011. House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative P. Wilson.
Here.
Representative Seaton.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Representative Gruenberg.
Here.
Representative Peterson.
Here.
Representative Johansson, not present. Chair Lynn.
Here. Okay, with that, everybody, we've got a very, very full agenda. We want to give all these bills a due consideration, but I do want to move along, and I would ask everybody to please make their comments concise and to the point, and I'll tell anybody who testifies the same thing. First on the agenda is SB 93, license plates. Number two is HB 182, electronic distribution of agency reports. We're going to move HB 190 to third, and then we'll be considering HB 216 and thinking about HB 77. So with that, I would like to bring SB 93 to the table. And where are those notes you just gave me? Okay, fine. Okay. Okay. With that, we do have a CS that should be what's the number here?
It's version I.
Version I. It looked like a one to me. And I want to thank Representative Keller, my vice chair, for conducting the first portion of that bill the other day when I had a bill up in the other committee. Thank you for that, and I would entertain a motion to adopt the CS for discussion.
Mr. Chair, I move that we make House Bill 93 version India State Affairs CS as a working document.
I'll object for discussion.
Okay, objection for discussion. Representative Gruenberg, with that, ask Chief of Staff Nancy Minley to briefly, quickly explain the CS.
Good morning. My name is Nancy Manley. I am staff to Representative Bob Lynn. The proposed committee substitute creates five specialty request license plates, as well as adopting Senator Wilikowski's plan to afford DMV the authority to issue specialty plates. The proposed plates that have been included in the CS are In God We Trust, Choose Life, National Rifle Association, Breast Cancer Awareness, and Leo Veterans.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'd ask both of my vice chair. Did we or did we not close public testimony when you had your hearing the other day?
No.
When you filled in for me? Do you remember?
I left it open.
Okay, left it open.
Yeah.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Mr. Chairman, under this bill, is the entirety unchanged of 93, the original version, rolled into the CS, or is there changes to the original version in addition to adding the other specified plates?
Okay. As it stands right now, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, the first portion of that bill, Senator Wilikowski came here to explain, what Senator Wilikowski had, I think that's unchanged. And then the other special license was rolled into that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my question.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Phil Wilikowski.
First of all, I want to thank you for all the discussions we've had and for your cooperation. We're going to get one of these puppies out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As long as it's not a dog.
Yeah, not a dog.
For the record.
And would you please speak a little louder?
Yeah, absolutely. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage, and I appreciate you taking this up. Just looking over the bill right now, one concern which I would have is I think based on what I've seen and the comments that I've heard, there could be a constitutional challenge to the one provision. Section 3, page 4, lines 7 through 14. What we've heard on our side, and I believe you've heard on your side as well. Yes,
page 4.
Page 4, right. What the courts have traditionally held is if you have one viewpoint, then you need to have the other viewpoint. So I know, at least I've been told there are organizations who would file a lawsuit over the constitutionality of having the choose life plate without having the opposing viewpoint, and so that would be one concern I did have, and they've been to my office and expressed that they would file a lawsuit. I think the courts have been pretty clear around the country that that would be unconstitutional to just solely have that viewpoint without having the opposing viewpoint. I don't know. I'm just sort of skimming through the rest of this. My initial bill doesn't look like you've changed anything. I appreciate that. And I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, just a moment, Representative Garberg. I know that has been a point of discussion, and Mr. Mittman, who is online today for some brief comments, and I think there are there not some cases around the country that, am I wrong, where we have this? Because, as I understand it, if we were to pass this bill or anybody else pass a bill like this, that any group that's not included in this could, in fact, go down to the DMV and choose a plate of their choosing, basically. And let's get to the point. We're talking about Planned Parenthood versus what is it? Choose Life, I think it is. And so, if Choose Life were to come in this bill, that doesn't preclude anybody, Planned Parenthood or almost anybody else, nonprofit, coming down and asking for a plate there. So there is equal opportunity for everybody to get a plate. At least that's the way I comprehend it. Is that your comprehension?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Under the SB 93 portion, anyone can go down, any 501c3 can go down and apply for a license plate and get
right.
It. I think you'll hear, and if you do ask Mr. Mittman or others, you probably hear them still think that that's unconstitutional because it does create two different classes. There's one class that gets it through law automatically, and there's another class that has to go out and get 50 plates and pay the registration fees, et cetera, et cetera. So I just wanted to maybe be aware of that.
Thank you. I know, and we've had these discussions, and you've been very, very cooperative, you know, on all this because, you know, we all want the right thing. Representative Gruenberg, quickly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. When you indicated, Senator, to delete page 4, lines 7 to 14, you would also have to delete page 2, lines 7 to 12 as part of that amendment, would you not?
Yes, Representative Gruenberg, through the chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments, questions from the committee? Representative Wilson?
I'm just kind of appalled at even hearing what I just heard. We don't do that in tons of bills that we pass. We don't say, oh, golly, maybe we, I mean, as long as we give the option for people to do, I mean, they could have come and asked any legislator to do this. And so I don't think they have a leg to stand on because they know that they could have done it. They just never did it. And so the fact that they would threaten to sue over such a thing, they can come and do it without any problem. Or they could have done it for years, and they never did. So I don't understand where the rub is.
Senator?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. The rub is in the court cases, which are fairly clear, in the license plate cases around the country, where the courts have held if you allow one form of speech, basically in a government-sanctioned license plate, then you have to allow the opposing form of speech.
We've had
Reverend Wilson?
We've had it all along. Anytime they could have done this, and now we're just changing it so that they don't have to come to the legislature, that they can go to the without going through us. So
we would not change this without an amendment. There's no amendment on the table.
Yeah.
I'd like to recognize Representative Johansson, who has chosen to join us. Is somebody down there wanting to speak or not? Representative Jenny Grunberg?
I just said that there's no amendment yet. I have prepared an amendment. I haven't decided whether to offer it. If I do, there won't be a lot of debate.
Okay, well, that's because what I do not want to do, you know, we have a license plate bill here before us. There are two aspects of that plate. The first aspect, of course, is how do we go about getting future, I guess you call it specially licensed plates. That's one part. The other part of the bill is rolling in several of the license plate bills that have come to us from various legislators, including myself. And this is not, you know, I don't want this license plate bill to get into, you know, a Planned Parent right to life debate. Yeah, that's not what this bill is all about. I want to focus on the license plate. So you can say anything we want to, but let's don't get into that. That's another subject, another day, perhaps another bill. Is that your hand, or you just?
Yes.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, when you were going through the discussion of this, other viewpoints would be allowed under the sections of your previous bill, but what I understood was that the only difference was the submission of the registration fee was setting out different. Is that there is no registration fee currently for plates that are statutorily set and the administratively application would have a registration fee paid for by a group? Is that the distinction that you're making here?
I'm actually going to, because I think I know it, but I want to have my staff give an answer a little bit more precise than I could.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Carla Hart. I'm an aide to Senator Wilikowski. I think you're referring to the application fee that the organization would charge for the setup. Under the original Senate Bill 93, this is revenue neutral, that there would be a fee set that would cover those setup charges. Under the current legislative process, the Division of Motor Vehicles absorbs the cost of the setup and the developing of the plates. Is that what you're asking?
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Sorry. Go ahead, please.
So I guess it seems to me as long as there's an avenue for other speech to come forward and get plates, it seems like the only distinction or class distinction that we're talking about is a class that would have this submit this registration fee versus one where it's absorbed by those that are statutorily implemented, that's absorbed by the department. So if I'm missing something, that is the only, as I'm understanding the argument, that's really the only distinction in the class, as long as there is a reasonable way for anyone coming forward to speech to get specialty license plates. Am I correct?
Thank you. Through the chair, I am not an attorney, but I read a number of court cases relating to license plates. There's no consensus around the country. Different courts have ruled different ways, but there does seem to be a distinction that legislatively approved plates are considered a form of government speech, whereas administratively approved plates appear to be a form of private speech. And so I think there might be some distinction there in terms of a court case because of the public-private distinction. But again, the courts have ruled different ways in different states.
In other words, you get two lawyers together, you got three opinions. Okay. Representative Grunberg?
As I understand it, on the Choose Life license plates, for example, the design and everything set out in statute. If there were to be pro-choice license plates, for example, or something else, there would be an additional cost to design the plate, right?
Thank you. The group that's applying would have an additional cost, yes.
Okay. Any other comments from the table? If not, I have one person on the line. I don't know if I have anybody in the room or not who wants to talk to this other than the participants in the bill. Representative, then I do have Jeff Mittman, ACLU, on board. He visits here quite often. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I spoke about it on the original bill that I would be offering an amendment to take the number from 50 down to 10. That's on the substitute version I. That would be on page 3, line 10. That'll be to submit registration fees for at least 50 motor vehicles, the way this reads. I think that, you know, we have smaller groups that may want license plates. In fact, when we were talking about Lao veterans plates, we were not sure how many that would be, and if you didn't reach the 50, then you would not be able to utilize the administrative reason. So for that reason, I'm going to make an amendment at the proper time, and I just wanted the people that are testifying to understand that I will make that amendment to go to 10.
After we close public testimony, we'll bring it back to the table, and we can do amendments, hopefully very few.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other comments, Senator?
Yeah, I have one question. I'm sorry.
Senator Greenberg. No. Do you have any other comments?
No, other than
now to take my foot out of my mouth. What I'd like to ask you, Senator, is through the chair, page 3, line 12. And I'm going to ask Mr. Mittman this. This was a line of questioning we started last time also. May not be, quote, offensive, unquote, in purpose, nature, activity, or name. I'm wondering whether there may be any constitutional problems with vagueness there, particularly when you're getting into the area of free speech. And if so, what a more safer term might be rather than offensive in that. You follow me?
Thank you, Representative Greenberg, through the chair. I don't think I initially shared your same concerns after reviewing the case law, speaking with DMV. I think they have there is a body of case law around the country and in that deals with that, because they have personalized license plates right now, mm-hmm. and I think they use a similar type of standard, offensive in purpose, nature, activity, or name. So I think there's a well-established body of law to deal with that.
That I just wanted to establish on the record, this language is not unique to Alaska, but it is found in other state laws?
Yes.
Do you have any particular sites you can put on the record? I want to be certain, Mr. Chair, that we're on safe ground with this. This doesn't go to judicial.
We're never on safe ground in the legislature.
I would just like to have a citation or something that we can point to the fact that there was research and we believe we're on good.
I'm turning to my staff right now.
Okay. Representative Keller.
Oh, she was about to answer.
Well, I beg your pardon. I cut you off.
I'm sorry. Looking at Pennsylvania, which was the model that we started with, they simply stated that the department may refuse any combination of letters and numbers for cause and shall adopt reasonable rules and regulations for the issuance of plates. And then within their regulations, which I don't have in front of me, they had the sort of offensive and discriminatory aspect.
Are you aware of any cases upholding that? I'll ask Mr. Mittman. That's okay if you don't.
I think that'd be good.
That's fine.
Representative Keller, and then I'd like to go to public testimony after that. Representative Keller.
Yeah, I was.
Or Vice Chair Keller, I should say.
I was reflecting on how we got into this. You know, legislature. I'm sure everybody in the building is getting emailed. Why are you spending so much time on license plates? This is ridiculous. We got to talk about other more important things. Nonetheless, we're here, and the situation we have right now is every Alaskan has a direct representation when we choose to do something with a license plate. I'm really concerned about what is now subsection GG, if your objection is removed, putting it in there, because what it does is it removes the Alaskan voters one step from a process that voters can be pretty passionate about. It puts it down to a one or two layers, you know, into the administration. And our only option, if we were to pass this, will be to delete the whole program, and say no more specialty plates, or We could try to get in after the fact and try to regulate, okay, that one isn't appropriate or that one isn't, and then we are up for lawsuits. You know, I mean, good grief. That, you know, talk about, clear messing with freedom of speech. Everybody's sick of license plates, you know, including our constituents, and I would like to see this bill move. So what I'm going to be doing, and this is more in the spirit of just the discussion, I'm going to be later on offering a sunset to GG so that we can put this out there on a trial balloon basis, and we'll have the option that way of looking at it again in 3 years and determining whether or not it's working, make adjustments, get rid of this section or whatever later on. And I think that way, Senator Wilkowski, we can maybe move forward. So that's just let you know what I'm thinking.
I have a couple of questions about the amendment after we get there. I also have Whitney Bruce online to answer questions if necessary. Mr. Mittman, are you online?
Mr. Speaker, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, rather. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I want to be clear, as this is a potentially contentious issue. The ACLU, as an organization protecting constitutional rights, does not take a position on whether or not the state of Alaska should or should not have a program of special license plates. Additionally, the ACLU does not take a position on whether or not individual organizations should or should not be entitled to create plates. What we do is we look at the constitutional issues, and I'd like to draw the committee's attention to an additional case. It is the Ninth Circuit case, which would be controlling for the state of Alaska, as the committee is aware. It's Arizona Life Coalition, Inc. v. Stanton, and the site for that is 515 F3rd 956. I'm pleased to cite this case as it represents a position that I've spoken with several members of the legislature about. And this is where the courts protected the rights of a Choose Life organization to obtain a plate under Arizona's license plate system. And I'm pleased to cite to that case because, as I informed some members of the legislature, the ACLU would have similarly represented the Choose Life organization. The issue is not, in this case, the political content or the message of the speech. The issue is the protection of First Amendment rights. Unfortunately, in the CS that the committee is considering, what is being established is clear discrimination. I understand that there is a process for all organizations to potentially obtain plates. The problem is that there is clear discrimination in the process. So that there are two issues. There is content discrimination and there is process discrimination. Under the bill being contemplated, if there were one individual in the state of Alaska who wanted to obtain a NRA plate and nine individuals who wanted to obtain a Brady handgun control plate, the one individual could go down to the DMV and get the NRA plate, but the nine individuals would not be given the opportunity to get the handgun control plate. That is not only process discrimination, but you end up with viewpoint discrimination.
May I ask, Mr. Member?
Life plate,
may I ask, could they not, if this bill passes under the original portion of this bill, could they not simply go down to the DMV and apply for one of these other license plates, expressing a different viewpoint, perhaps?
Mr. Chair, they could apply, unfortunately, if they didn't meet the differential requirements that the process establishes, they could not be successful. So essentially what has happened is if the legislature were to pass the bill as written with certain viewpoints privileged over others, the courts would look at it and say there is a discriminatory process so that the government is essentially giving preference to one message over another. And that, in sum, is the problem. And it was interesting. In the Arizona case that I cite, what the government's position was, well, we did not approve Choose Life, but we also didn't approve a competing message. And the court says that's not the way it works. Essentially, because First Amendment rights are so fundamental and so important, the courts are especially protective of these rights. I know, for instance, Supreme Court Justice Scalia is very strict on First Amendment protections. So what the ACLU would recommend to the committee is essentially SB 93, as originally written, was perfectly neutral. It set up one system for the entire state. Nobody had a leg up. Nobody had a leg down. Everybody had to follow the same rules. Under our reading of the court cases, and particularly Ninth Circuit law, there's really no basis for any organization to complain that they were being discriminated against or that another group is being favored. It is our recommendation, given the case law, given the Ninth Circuit case, that a viewpoint-neutral process, or else essentially all organizations who have had any sort of bill, be approved, and that the legislature put in language that allows for approval. So, for example, SB 16, as it passed through the Senate, allowed for both, in that case, Choose Life and Pro-Family Pro-Choice. That bill would be part of the legislative record in reviewing whether or not the legislature had been neutral in both process and content. With that, I'd like to complete my testimony, and I'm, of course, available to answer any questions which members may have. And again, I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your input. Grunberg, we've got to keep it brief here. We're going to have so many bills.
I understand. Mr. Mittman, you heard my question also on page 3, line 12. May not be offensive in purpose, nature, activity, or name. Do you see any constitutional problem with that line?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. When we first reviewed this bill, the language, of course, jumped out to us as well. Potentially, it could be an opportunity for a government agency to use it to deny language based on the fact that it's language used around the country, based on testimony from the Department of Motor Vehicles that they would exercise limited editorial control similar to that they do for license plates already. We see this as a light yellow flag. It is something that we'd watch, but we would not anticipate that it would be a problem.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bittman. Did anybody in the audience wish to testify on this? If not, I'm going to close public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion. I heard some murmurings of some amendments.
There's an objection yet out there.
I will remove my objection.
Thank you. Okay. I believe we're Representative Seaton.
So this is adopted then?
Yeah, CS is adopted. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that on page 3, line 10, we change 50 to 10.
Okay, is there an objection for discussion or no objection? Okay, hearing no objection, that's adopted. That one was easy. Okay.
That's number one?
That'd be amendment number one. Are there any other amendments?
Yeah, I would like to make amendment. new section 4 on page 5.
Wait, page 5?
Yeah. So it'd be line 8 and then renumber 4.
Wait, I got to find it.
But I didn't understand.
This is a conceptual amendment, and what it is a sunset for section GG. And it'll be.
You have something typed here.
Right. This is section GG is on page 2, line 26.
Would you explain your conceptual amendment, please? what it does and what it doesn't do?
Well, again, I mean, I've gotten 3 or 4 emails at least that say, quit spending time on license plates, and I've answered back, well, I've got less than 15 to 20 minutes involved. No, I can't say that anymore. So it's just I'm concerned about what this does. The potential I see under this bill is a lot of things, including marketing, new kind of a bumper sticker for any number of 501c3 organizations. I'm uneasy. That doesn't mean that my concerns are accurate. I'm just projecting and thinking about it. So I'm just saying, hey, let's look back at this thing in a couple of years, see where we're at, and that'll give us the option of starting over with this particular law. So
now,
what it does is...
This, you're talking about GG. Would that be the bill before we had the CS?
Right.
But we're not applied to any of the particular license plates discussed in the bill.
What it is it reflects the entirety of SB 93 before we put the other license plates in it. So it's a part that makes the universal. Senator Wilkowski's part of the CS is really what it is. And It sunsets at, and I'm proposing June 1st, 2014.
And who had their hand up? Representative Seaton and then Grunberg.
Thank you. And I believe we objected for discussion.
Yes.
Who did, please?
I objected for discussion.
Thank you.
I guess my question is on sunsets, there's generally a wind down period and we require an audit and those things. So is that going to be the case on this, that we're going to hit that point a year in advance and then it's going to require a legislative audit of the before, so that this sunset will come back before us? I guess my problem is I don't see as big a problem, and so if there creates a problem, I would rather people say, hey, there's a problem, and then address it in a bill instead of trying to do a sunset and requiring an audit and, I mean, the expense of what we're going to put the legislature through for something that I see as not a large problem, because I don't see it with the vanity plates. I don't think that there's going to be, as long as people have access to this method of getting plates for organizations, and we've now made it small enough so that it's only 10 plates that they have to be able to do for a unit, I don't think we're going to see problems. And so if we do see problems, I think that we could address it not through a sunset, but just through addressing it as a bill. So,
In response to that, I do see a problem, and this is a way that gives the option for review. I don't know what you mean about the audit or whatever. That wasn't my intent. My intent is that if we care about this program in 2013, then we have to deal with it. And those of us that will be here, it'll be on our radar screen. And those that are wanting to maintain it, it'll be on their radar screen. They'll bring it back for us. I really think that we are opening up a can of worms, and we're two things. We're opening up a can of worms, and I'll explain that a little bit, but we're also reducing some of our responsibility as legislators, which I've already described. The can of worms is that anyone with a 501c3 can go get specialty plates, and I'm just not prepared in my mind to be seeing a number of plates, maybe, and I don't mean to be picking on anybody or anything. Amway, you know, forms a 501c3, and they go out and they promote it by maybe giving free registrations for 10 vehicles now, if we go with your amendment, and then all of a sudden you've got just a different level of thought on this whole thing on license plate, and I don't want it to get out of control completely, and then we just say, well, that's the administration problem. So by making it a sunset, it brings it back before the legislature. If there's no problem that appears, then great. And I would prefer, Chair Lynn, I'd like to get DMV Director Whitney Brewster's concern that she has about us passing this bill. Because, you know, it is a possibility that I'm overreacting, but I'm just trying to be cautious here.
It's a good thing. Before I go to you, let's get Whitney Brewster online, if she's available to address that point. Ms. Brewster, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Go ahead.
For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. The Division of Motor Vehicles currently, as this committee has discussed, does have regulations that governs how it deals with personalized plates. For instance, it can't be vulgar or discriminatory or target a particular racial group. And the regulations have been very helpful in determining how the DMV deals with personalized plates. We would utilize similar language of that regulation in dealing with organizations applying for a plate. It would be my preference that through the regulatory process, we encourage a lot of comments, and I would very much appreciate feedback from the legislature as those are being, if this bill passes, feedback on the, those regulations so that we come up with a very tight process and one that the legislature would like to see going forward, because I do understand Representative Keller's concern that it is somewhat giving the responsibility to the DMV to determine which organizations are appropriate. I would like to mention as well that the DMV does have an administrative hearing process for personalized plates. We do, if someone is denied a plate, they do have the opportunity to request an administrative hearing, and then the administrative hearing officer at the DMV will make a determination as to whether or not the DMV acted appropriately. If it did, if the individual chooses to appeal that to the Superior Court, they can certainly do that, and then it goes through the court system. I would imagine that we would have a similar process for organizational plates if they were denied the plate. Obviously, that does not deal with Representative Keller's specific concern that we would be having an Amway plate or another organization. But as was discussed in this committee, the court has consistently stated that it is an issue of free speech, and if we do make these plates available to 501c3s, we would have to seriously look at that particular issue when making a determination. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Senator McKellar, do you have any follow up there?
Just for the record, Whitney and I have not talked, and it sounds like your concerns are the same as mine, and I don't think that we have a free speech issue. I know it's debatable, anything is, but I don't think we have a free speech issue when it is the determination of where every Alaskan is represented when we make the choices now. But I think this gets us into an arena where we're just turning it loose, and I maybe that is completely appropriate. I'm willing to say that, but I want a sunset on there to ensure that we look at this again in a few years.
That only that one portion,
right?
By only underlining that. Reverend Greenberg, did you?
This was not to Ms. Brewster. I have a question for the senator, though.
Okay. Representative Peterson, this is on point with Ms. Brewster.
Yes, it is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Brewster, have you had a lot of problems with turning down personalized license plates, and then the person who requested that plate requesting a hearing? Has that happened often in the past?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, we do have software that will catch inappropriate language on a plate before it's issued. But it doesn't catch all of them. We have some very creative Alaskans out there. We deny, I would say, about 6 or 7 a month. I'm sorry, a week, and very few of them ever request hearings. I think they pretty much understand why they are denied the plate. But I would say that we have approximately one specialty plate hearing a quarter. It's not very many. And if I might, Mr. Chairman,
yes,
just add one other item. The DMV does have fraternal organization plates. If the committee will recall, last session there was a fraternal organization plate established, To date, we have had no one actually apply for a fraternal organization plate. We've had some questions, but no one has really pursued that, which basically allows that was the first bill that kind of opens the door to various entities requesting a plate, not through the legislative process. So I just thought that would be interesting for the committee to know.
That is interesting. I know we had so much debate on it, now nobody's done anything about it. Representative Peterson.
Thank you. So my next question is, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense that a 501(c) organization would go to the trouble to create license plates that would be offensive. So do you foresee an organization going all to that trouble just to get their plates turned down?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, I know Ms. Hart has done some research on this. I know in Pennsylvania, I think that they've had thus far one organization that was questionable as far as being offensive. I don't foresee it being a big issue in Alaska. And if the organization is denied a plate, they do have an avenue for appeal.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to point out that the Reverend Wilson had an excused absence for a short period of time there. She's back as she had a bill up in another committee, and this is what happens this time of the year. Any other discussion? Grunberg, and then we'll see if we're going to keep the objection and move it and act accordingly.
I guess just procedurally, we're on the Keller Amendment number 2.
That's correct.
And I think I will reserve my question because it's not on that amendment, and then we can deal with the amendment. But just technically, Representative Keller, through the chair, you have given us a document labeled the conceptual amendment, and I assume that's number 2, but if it is, we should just put for the record that you're talking about deleting from page 2, line 26, through page 3, line 21, and we probably should make...
No, that's not accurate at all. We're not deleting anything. This bill just simply puts a subset on that section. We're leaving it in the bill, and I'm sorry. I'm apologize because I wasn't clear when I described it. And, no, this is just puts a sunset on that section so that in 2 or 3 years we look at this section again.
And technically, I think the way that'll work is, and somebody asked me this on the floor yesterday, they'll add 2 sections to the bill if this passes. Number 1, a repealer of this, and number 2, an effective date of the repealer. And that was what Representative Johansson asked. Same question.
Yeah, yes, that's why it's conceptual. Thank you, sir.
Representative Johansson.
Yeah, 2 things you're not supposed to tell on me.
We have all kind of people who are doing that. Go ahead.
I just want to hear what the sponsor thinks of the amendment.
Okay. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Johansson. Well, 2 things. Number 1, just on the time, I don't have it right in front of me, but if it's an ending date of 2013, I would just point out that Section 4, page 5, the Act doesn't take effect until January 1, 2012. So if you end that section on 2013, and I don't know that's what you're doing, that's what I thought you said you were doing.
That's a very good point.
And that would only be 1 year.
Well, clarification is 2014.
That'd be 2 years rather than 3.
2015 would be okay.
Would you want to do an amendment to the amendment?
Make amendment to the amendment to change that to 2015, 2015.
Okay. Good catch. And without objection, amendment to the amendment passes.
And then philosophically, the purpose of the bill is to just remove license plates from the legislature. So you'll be back again in several years debating this issue. But I certainly respect the committee's choice to do that.
Okay. Who did the objection to that?
I did.
Do you maintain or
Yeah, I'm going to maintain my objection, and the reason I'm maintaining it is because I think we're setting up an administrative procedure to get these license plates out of our hair. Yes, and if it is a problem, we can always bring it back up, and someone can bring it back up, and I'm sure that if there is a problem, it'll be identified for us at that time. And so rather than having a sense that that requires us to do that, and I think that there probably will be, you know, an audit for the sunset, and it seems to be an expense that I don't think we need to do.
And one, Reverend Wilson, are you familiar, you're out and this is offered?
I see the amendment right here, so.
Okay, so, okay. Objection is maintained. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Johansson?
Yes.
Representative P. Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Keller?
Yes.
Representative Grunberg?
No.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Chair Lynn?
Yes.
Four yay, three nay.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any other amendments?
Mr. Chair?
I knew that. Representative Grunberg.
I don't know whether I've prepared an amendment, and just for the members' edification, I'm going to pass it out. I'm not necessarily going to offer it, but I want you to see what I'm talking about
right
here. And actually, let me take a copy. And
that'd be nice.
Yeah, and this, Nancy, maybe you should have this original, and the copy for the senator, too. All right, you made a bunch, so I'm just passing them down.
Okay.
Senator Wilikowski.
You're not making a motion now. You're simply discussing.
I want to ask him a question, whether this is something to be offered. Senator, this would basically delete page 2, line 7 to 12, and page 4, line 7 to 14.
What would be the effect of that?
To delete the special request, choose license plates, not because for it or against it, but because it would not, it would potentially violate the prohibition against advocating one point of view. However, when Mr. Mittman, I think, testified, he said that there may be other provisions in here that would be similarly objectionable for advocating one point of view, for example, gun rights as opposed to gun control or something like that. And so what I'm wondering, Senator, in view of that testimony by Mr. Mittman, what would your position be? Because I think there may be some other sections that would be similarly.
First of all, I object for purpose of
discussion. Well, kind of a pre-objection, I guess.
I see. Pre-objection.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Grunberg, to the chair. I would support the amendment, this conceptual amendment, because I think it resolves the constitutional issues that have been presented, and both sides can go forward under the administrative process and be treated equally. So I think this conceptual amendment does resolve the problem.
With that, Mr. Chair, I will offer, and I guess it's conceptual amendment number 3.
Number 3. Okay, an objection. Before we go to that, did you have a comment, Representative Seaton?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure that this gets around other than this one bill, because we've got specialty license plates that are established in state law. It seems like if we have two systems, the only way that you get to one system is repeal all the laws that have established the statutory mechanism and go all to administrative, because anything that follows is going to be done administrative, and you're going to have this two systems. And I'm not willing to do that. I don't think we need to do that. But I don't think that looking at this one particular plate overcomes two systems, and I think that providing a new system, administrative system, gets us to the level of concern, and so I'm not going to vote for the amendment.
Okay, the amendment was offered without for Representative Keller, and then we're going to go to.
I have no comments, sir.
I'd like to speak to my objection if I would.
Again, please.
I'd like to speak to my objection, please. If I would be allowed by the chair. Thank you.
You are allowed. Thank you. Encouraged.
First of all, the amendment was offered, and the description by the amendment maker talked about this singular plate and that others in the bill may fall under this umbrella, yet he specifically, no pun intended, chosen this particular license plate, and also articulated that Choose Life connotates one particular point of view, and I'd like him to express what my point of view on Choose Life is.
May I just, for one moment, I want to explain why I'm doing it this way, and maybe ask the Senator one other question.
But let's go to Reverend Keller. Continue, then we'll go back to you, and then go to the Senate.
Mr. Chair, may we have a brief at ease for a second?
At ease.
My point being, the maker of the amendment could I guess, say anything, but I don't know what particular point of view he was referring to, because Choose Life, from my particular point of view, might be a statement on don't commit suicide, choose life, don't kill yourself. Maybe that's what my belief on Choose Life is. And to characterize that statement as something in particular and singling it out when there are other portions of this bill that he himself spoke on the record could fall under this umbrella, I think, is an attempt to extract a particular phrase and license plate out of this. And I'm not going to forward on my thoughts on the motivation, because that's not allowed under our uniform rules, but I disagree with the entire premise of removing this based upon one particular point of view of the meaning of Choose Life. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's also, you know, good diet, good exercise, and so on. Representative Wilson. Okay, fine. Thank you. Do you maintain your objection?
Yes,
you have. Call the roll, please.
Mr. Chair,
I beg your pardon. I'm not trying to catch you. I just didn't have you down there. Go ahead.
Okay. Senator, do you still support the amendment?
Well,
because let me tell you, I've got to say, I think there is merit in some of the things that have been said, and I was frankly, I would have withdrawn the amendment, but I wanted to respect your wishes.
Well, I guess my, I introduced my bill just to try to resolve this license plate issue and have all these removed, and so now it's sort of ironic that all these plates are being introduced. But just, you know, as an attorney, you sort of, one of the first rules is you try to protect your client from getting sued. And I think by having, we have people who are saying they're going to sue us if we pass this legislation. I believe them. They've done it in the past, and they've won. We're probably exposing the state to thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees by leaving that in there. So my legal hat says take it out. Avoid the problem.
What does your legislative hat say?
My legislative hat says take it out. I would have preferred the bill to go clean. I understand there are politics involved. So I see where the votes are on the committee. So,
Mr. Chair, with that, out of respect for the sponsor of the bill, I will offer the amendment to whatever the committee's wishes are, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. Can you call the roll, please?
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Johansson.
No.
Representative P. Wilson.
No.
Representative Seaton.
No.
Representative Keller.
No.
Representative Grunberg.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
Yes. I don't know. No, take that back. No.
Two yay, five nay.
We don't need to do another vote on that, do we? Because of my.
No. Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I have to run to State Affairs where I'm actually hearing your license plate bill right now.
Senator, I'd like to thank you very, very much for all your help on this. You've really been great to work with, and I mean that sincerely.
Appreciate it.
Okay. With that, I'll enter, without further discussion, I'll entertain a motion for passing the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House, the Senate Bill 93, State Affairs, LS0515, India, out of committee as conceptually amended and with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Thank you. Without objection, the bill passed from committee, and I would like to sincerely thank everybody on the committee with that. I think some very good points were raised. We're going to go. let me ask a question. Reverend, are you prepared now, or do you want to still vote?
I can do it whenever you want.
Let's keep the original order then, because you're back. Let's go then to HB 182.
Nope.
That's wrong.
Yeah, that's Keller's. I mean, not Keller. Johansson, he wants to pull that.
Okay, I beg you. We're going to go then. We're going to go to HB 216. We'll pick a bill here someplace.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right,
thank you.
Yeah, see, I'm going to go back for a second. I'll sign it at the end.
Who's coming forward?
I am. Just a second.
Take a shot at it easier. State Affairs Committee is back in session. Please identify yourself and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. For the record, my name is Representative Peggy Wilson, District 2. And House Bill 216 deals with two frustrations with the process of creating new state regulations. One is that agencies don't often get regulations written in a timely fashion. Occasionally, an effective date will come and go without a regulation in place, leaving those affected unable to move forward with the plans. And the biggest reason was when I was in on the Resources Committee, and we had to deal with the governor's tax plan, you know, with the oil tax. And it was very difficult because not all the regulations here, it had been almost 3 years, not all the regulations had even been written, and we were supposed to make decisions on this based on what we thought was happening, but we didn't have any solid proof because the companies were working with regulations that they weren't sure for sure were in were what they were, you know. And so
another witness?
Okay. So anyway, because of that, that's one of the reasons that I this bill, because it's very difficult for us as legislators to deal with actual facts when the regulations aren't all completed yet. And two, the public often doesn't understand what proposed regulations mean and are therefore unable to comment on proposed changes. Now, in order to respond to those two frustrations, House Bill 216 has two sections. In the first section, it will require that the legislature set up a time to have regulations completed and ready to implement when the bill, you know, and that could easily be done during the process right along with the fiscal note, you know, how long they think those regulations will take to put into place. Legislators need to know that when they're setting the date for the bill to become to be going into effect. So this will help people set the time to have the regulations completed and ready to implement, helping people plan to relate activities by making it clear when to expect the new regulations to be in effect. And then the second section will require that agencies provide descriptive summaries of proposed changes, written in plain English to accompany notifications. This will help legislators and the public better understand the proposed changes in the regulations. The public will be better informed and more likely to participate in the government process. The descriptions do not need to be lengthy, depending on the complexity of the regulation, and will not be legally binding, but at least gives the general public an idea of what's happening. On your desk, you'll find a note from Attorney Teresa Bannister, who drafted the bill. Given her comments, I recognize that the courts are unlikely to void a bill for violating the requirements of this bill, and there may be need to be work on the language of 216 to make it more workable. And however, I feel that there's a great need to try and improve both these frustrations with the regulation process, and this bill is an attempt to do that. And I'm very open for any suggestions or any changes that will do it in a better way. However, I think that we really need to deal with it, because you all have gotten the proposed regulation changes, and it says regulation changes in AS, and it doesn't tell us a thing. And then we, do I need to tell some of my constituents something that might affect them? I don't even know. Then I have to go to the statutes and see what that is, and it's very involved. And so I think instead of legalese, we need some things in place in Americanese so that we understand it and so our constituents can understand it.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Johans?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you bringing this issue forward to talk about. I think it's going to prove to be something that's going to take a lot of time to figure out, because the initial questions that come to my mind are timelines of public process, the complexities of implementing statute. Sometimes we write statute that is frankly difficult to implement through the agencies. We also have initiatives that are passed, which are probably the worst type of law for departments to interpret and understand, because they're just basically laid down at their feet and told to implement. We saw a lot of problems with that with the cruise ship initiative, that they literally could not implement regulations because the bill was written so horribly. So I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think I'm going to need a whole lot of information and discussion before I can support it moving out of this committee. This is one of the areas that this committee really, I think our charge is to really look at this, and I also will rely on your vice chairman, who's chaired Reg Review, for a lot of the information. I think he has a lot of experience in this area and would be very helpful in understanding exactly what we're doing here. But
so
I think it's a good conversation.
Representative Keller here.
Yep.
Representative Keller.
I just appreciate your comments on the thank you for bringing us forward, because I really agree with you that we need to do something to make the regulation process understandable to the public, available to the public, and everything else. I agree with Representative Johansson that there are many unanswered questions that the bill raises, and I'll commit to you that I'll be very happy to work with you over the interim, you know, and try to see if we can come up with a really good bill. But there's questions I have. Whenever you one of the things that happened to us on the Regulation Review Committee that we noticed is that nobody seemed to notice that there was problems with the regulations until the last minute. So guess who wants to have an extension? The very people that are most worried and most affected.
Yeah.
You know, so you have that dilemma also. So that has to be addressed somehow in the statute.
Thank you, Representative Gernberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, when we had a bill a few weeks ago on the waiver of attorney-client privilege, we talked about a number of things that really need to be looked at by the legislature in the question of, you know, how the rulemaking procedures under the APA are working. And I think that would be a very, very – I'm kind of talking to you, Mr. Chair, also – a very, very good project for this committee in the interim. Would you be willing to allow your bill to be used as a vehicle to look at the general subject of possibly whether we need to make any changes in the rulemaking process?
Absolutely.
And Mr. Chair, I hope that we can follow through. I will commit, if these two representatives are willing to do it, I'm certainly willing to participate.
We'll consider that. I'm not going to make interim appointments at the moment. Okay. If we're not there yet. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm not going to schedule. I'm not going to make an interim schedule at this point.
I appreciate that.
Thank you.
I too like the concept of of this bill. I'm just worried about coming up with a definition of easily understandable, because what might be easily understandable to one person might not necessarily be easily understandable to someone else. And I do think that we could do some work on this bill and maybe make it do what the sponsor would like it to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the sponsor or anybody else?
You know, I would like to make one comment.
Yes.
The sponsor statement quoted a problem that had appeared in one of my other bills, and I do want the committee to know that I'm going to redo my sponsor statement, because it's nothing against that department at all, and I you know, and they felt real bad about it, and I feel bad because I used that as an example when I really, my real intentions were with the, with this, you know, the long time it took for the oil tax regime to get changed and get those regulations in effect. And I don't think that probably was maybe their fault either. But these things happen. We know they happen. And so we've got to figure out a way to help things to proceed in a better way, so that I know, especially in the fishing industry, when these changes come out and it says a change to, well, then it gets fishermen all up in the air, and they don't understand, well, what's going to be changed? You know, are they going to stop something? Or, you know, does that mean that we're not going to be able to fish? I mean, there's a lot of different things that we need to look at and see if we can just make the process better for everybody.
Okay. I'd like to call Mr. Hurlbart. Hurlbart, I beg your pardon, are you there?
Yes, Chairman Lynn.
Thank you, ma'am. Please introduce yourself and hear good things about you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ward Hurlbart. I'm the Director of the Division of Public Health and the Chief Medical Officer with the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm very appreciative of the gracious comments that Representative Wilson just made, but there was a situation where we were clearly embarrassed and felt badly. This relates to House Bill 277, where clearly we dropped the ball on moving as rapidly as we could.
What was HB 77? What was that bill? What was the title?
That was the epinephrine for the wilderness. For situations okay. where there would be an unexpected, an emergency situation.
I'm familiar with epinephrine.
Yes. And we did not move as we should have and gotten the regulations published. I honestly don't know if they were on the radar of our former section chief who left the end of last summer or not, but clearly after she left, it was not on her radar. We do take these responsibilities very seriously. We try to consistently be responsive in a timely manner. And within our own division, we've instituted a system that'll be operated by our administrative support person there in Juneau to try to help assure that these lapses don't occur again. And as I say, we apologize for it. But I do appreciate Representative Wilson's gracious comments on that, but we did feel badly. And there's not a formal position of the administration on the bill, but it's certainly not what we intend to happen.
Thank you very much. Any other questions, Herbert? Thank you, sir, for your comments. And we do what we can with this bill. Okay. Any other questions on this bill? Anybody in the audience who would like to testify? I'm going to close public comments on this. And when we hear this bill again, we can open it back up. So public comments are closed. Any comments on the bill now? I anticipate we'll be holding this bill, but any comments at the moment? Representative Seaton.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to say that I agree that's an important aspect that needs to be addressed, and I appreciate the committee taking it up.
Thank you very much, and I can assure you, Representative Wilson, we will try to get this on the agenda as soon as we can, as soon as practical, when we come back in January. Okay? I understand we're going to hold HB 182 without hearing, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for bringing that forward, and you will likely be presenting that in January.
Mr. Chairman, if I might briefly,
yes.
we've been working on a CS for the committee and received phone calls this morning of some confusion on language, and rather than dump that into the committee in the last week, we've committed to work on it over the interim and bring it back, hopefully, to move it on up to finance early next session.
Okay, thank you very much.
Just a quick comment on that.
Go ahead, Representative Keller.
I'm delighted to hear that there's still life there and momentum. I think it's a very good bill, and I want to go forward.
Any other comments on HB 182? With that, we will, when you're ready in January, we'll try to get that before the committee.
Thank you.
And I think we have HB 190. Is somebody in the audience to present that bill? Going once, going twice.
Wait, just Mr. Chair.
Who's?
Bob, it's fighting
bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment here.
Excuse me. Amendment to what?
To this bill.
To which is this bill? We haven't called another bill up?
190.
Well, we haven't even heard the bill yet.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, we're at ease. To order, Representative Feige, please introduce yourself. And we've heard this bill before, and like to have you make any comments you'd like to make before we take further action.
Mr. Chairman, before we start, may I clarify which version has been adopted?
Yes,
by the
Representative Keller, would you make a not Keller, Representative Johansson? You can too if you want. Would you make some comments, please?
I just want to know what version's on the table. I'm not sure where we're at in the process.
Let me see here.
It's version D.
That's the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move version.
It's already been moved last.
Oh,
last
was it moved?
Meeting.
Okay.
Version D. Dot one.
Yeah.
Correct.
D.
D. D as in dog. Dot one. Adulter.
That's
D.
My amendment. It's the bill itself is version D.
We adopted the CS last meeting.
That's right. Okay, so we're on what version?
Delta.
Delta one.
No, just Delta.
Delta. Okay. Yeah. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Eric Feige, representing District 12. And the CS is version D.
Okay.
And the one significant change we made on here was at the top of page 2. There was a question that came up and during our revising process.
Just one more.
This was not completed. The adoption. For some reason,
it
didn't get totally adopted.
Eddie's. Bernberg.
As I understand procedurally, version D, as in Delta, 328, has been offered, and I was the member who interposed an objection for discussion only. The staff is nodding. With that, to expedite the matter, I will now remove my objection so we can have version D before the committee.
And so we are operating under version D. Everybody got that? Now let's start all over. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I love this job. Go ahead.
The main change to that was incorporated into version D was at the top of page 2. With the addition of the two paragraphs, lines 1 through 5. And what they account for are individuals who perhaps came to the state and started receiving permanent funds as dependents and then left the state as dependents of active duty military members. And then those dependents later on, if they joined the military, the way the under the original bill language, they would have been eligible for a permanent fund check, even though they had never really satisfied the intent of the bill, which was to be an Alaska resident when you moved in or when you were inducted into the military. So we added those two paragraphs, and then we do have several amendments, one originally proposed by Representative Grunberg, and then another one that came up in our discussions with the permanent fund office. And we can, if you'd like, we can move forward with those amendments, or I can answer any questions.
We have an amendment. What number amendment would this be that was just handed down? What number is this amendment?
Okay, you've got this amendment, and you have two numbers. So you have two of them. Whichever one you offer first, fund number one.
Okay, we're going to go. Now, I'd invite the vice chair or anybody to take amendment D.1.
Yeah, the maker of amendment can move it.
Yeah, who is the maker of amendment?
Grunberg.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move amendment number one for discussion.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Chair, we had two officers testify last time, a member of the Marine Corps and a member of the Navy. And thinking about it, as I understand it, these folks were ineligible because they were caught in this gap. And so they have not been able to obtain dividends for 2009, 2010, so far, and potentially 2011. And therefore, I asked the staff to Representative Feige if he would help coordinate and get an amendment prepared to cover these folks.
And that's this amendment?
And that is this amendment. But I would like to, if I may inquire for a minute, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Ms.
Do you,
Grunberg.
Mike, I would guess to you or to the representative, and you should identify yourself, but about how many folks would be covered by amendment number one to date?
For the record, Michael Paschal, staff representative Feige. I don't know if that exact number is available, but I'm guessing less than 100.
Less than 100.
Less than 100, okay.
And maybe, do we have anybody from the PFD folks on the line here?
We.
Yes, we do. We have Debbie Bitney from the PFD.
I think I'll probably ask her that question, but I would offer the amendment, and it's been objected to, and I think we need to get on the record.
And for the record, who did the object? Representative Johansson did. Okay.
Now, if I may, Mr.
Chair. Debbie Bitney, are you there?
Mr. Chair, may I ask one more question, please?
Go ahead.
To you folks, the sponsor and staff, did that adequately cover what you were interested in this amendment to?
Representative Grunberg through the chair, yes.
And you support the amendment?
Yes, we do.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll remove my objection.
Okay, objection removed. Amendment number one passes. Thank you. We have another amendment here. I'm not sure where this one originated.
I will move it. I believe this came from the sponsor, but I'll move it for discussion purposes. I'd move amendment D2.
Jack for discussion? Okay. Representative Keller.
I would defer to the sponsor of the bill.
Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, in our discussions with the Permanent Fund Division to make sure we encompass as many different possibilities as are out there, it is possible, perhaps, we don't expect it will involve very many additional individuals at all. But in the early days of the permanent fund program, they did not collect information to the same degree they collect it today. And there was the possibility that somebody would apply for a dividend because back in the late 80s, they were an Alaska resident. They received three permanent funds, or they were certainly a resident in the state of Alaska, who were then inducted into the military and have since maintained a military career. This language gives flexibility to the permanent fund division to waive the requirements for proving the eligibility in the 3 years prior to induction into military service. And that's simply because the information was never originally collected by the Permanent Fund Division.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So would this mean that maybe 20 years ago someone had collected the dividend for three years and then they went into the service and they're still there, we would have to go back and give them 20 years of dividends?
No. It's not retroactive in the sense that you would pay all those back dividends. There's a requirement to prove that you had essentially had been a resident for 3 years prior to induction. Because that information is either not collected or certainly very difficult to prove at this stage of 20 years hence, then it allows the department, if they believe that it's a good possibility that the person was in fact a resident, that they may waive the specific paragraphs in other parts of the legislation.
Representative Wilson.
So how far back are we talking about?
Well, the program started in 1985, I believe.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenberg.
If the members would look at the amendment we've just adopted, D1, it has a very limited retroactivity. It makes the bill limited retroactivity to January 1st, 2009 only.
Okay. That was the other amendment. So that would make them only be able to go back to 2009.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Fine.
Okay. Any other? Representative Keller.
Yeah. As I read the language, did you intend that the department can waive with no in other words, you're not asking them to verify in any way that the conditions of C1 and C2 are met. You're just saying they can waive it. So did you mean to put down some level of criteria, like if they're satisfied that they met the, if the department is satisfied that the criteria was met, even though they can't document it, that's one thing. If the department is saying, I'm going to waive this guy because I like him, or whatever, that seems like that maybe there ought to be another sideboard, and I just wondered if that was the intent, to leave it wide open totally to the department.
Representative Kelly, through the chair, the intent is not to make it wide open, but it is to give reasonable discretion to the division so that, perhaps lacking a complete accountability of those years, they can, if they believe that the person was in fact an in-state resident at that time, that they could then waive the requirements of C1 and C2.
Follow up, and then Representative Johansson.
Would you be open to language at the end, something conceptually that says if the department believes that the criteria of C1 and C2 have been met, something?
Sure, just I have no objection to that at all.
Would you say that for a potential amendment here, conceptual?
If you want, I can. Would you see? I'm the one that has the motion out there, so I would suggest that as a conceptual amendment to this conceptual amendment, if there's no objection.
Okay. Representative Keller.
I have a suggestion.
Okay. Yeah, Representative Johansson.
Thank you. First of all, I'm not sure if there's an amendment to the amendment pending or if you've reserved that motion.
Sorry, it wasn't clear. Representative Greenberg thinks he has a solution. Do you want to hear that?
Representative Greenberg.
Thank you. If I may, if you would yield for a minute. I think that, Representative Kelly, you're absolutely right. We don't want to have it as a waiver. And I want to have a minute while people are talking to try to come up with something. Number one, I think the procedure should require the department to adopt a regulation so it's done properly. But number two, it's really a problem of proof that you're dealing with here. You don't want them to waive it, but I would suggest, and I want to think of the exact language, that if there's insufficient documentation available to establish the nature of the absence as required by under C1 and 2 of this section, The department may, and I want to think exactly how I want to say this, may adopt regulations allowing alternative proof. To establish those facts. And I, if you give me a minute, I'm going to draft something. But if people will indulge me a bit.
Okay. Reverend Lee Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm thinking that what possibilities could be would be they don't have the the proof of the documentation that they came back because they threw their airplane tickets away because they didn't think that they qualified, but that but the department feels the absence was because of the military. The department can waive the requirement of these paragraphs.
It's very easy in the military to have some record of where you were assigned and where you were.
Right.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I guess these conversations with the amendment that's being proposed, particulars that Representative Wilson was just talking about, basically we're punting that discussion and decision to the regulatory agencies, and you're confident that I know Representative Gruenberg wants to specifically direct them to adopt regulations, but I would assume that you are assuming that's going to happen anyway to put some sort of written sideboards, and is it your intent to have the regulatory agency put up those guidelines, and of course that goes through the public process as well? That's kind of, I guess, what I'm getting at. Somewhere there needs to be a structure that defines, and you're comfortable with letting DMV do that.
Representative Johansson to the chair. I think it would be more clear if it was specified in statute. Perhaps a solution to this, the Permanent Fund Division does have records of who was issued a permanent fund. And as instead of asking them to create regulations, the requirements of paragraphs C1 and C2 in the CS do not talk about whether or not a person received a permanent fund check. But if the person did receive a permanent fund check, one could assume that he was in fact a resident at the time.
Okay.
So perhaps that would be a way to amend the amendment in a simple manner that is clear.
Let me go to Debbie Bitney, then we'll get her comments to this point before it gets more complicated. Okay. She's not here anymore. Okay, so we go to Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to figure out the intent and the sideboards of this. Is this only for people that collected three dividends before they were inducted, that had 10 years of dividends, and then they stopped receiving dividends because of the 10-year limitation? Is that the only people that are going to qualify under this waiver? Is there people from the military that received three dividends, received maybe one or two, changed their state of residency, and can they now come back and under this waiver and all? It wasn't that they received 10 years of dividends and then quit. We're no longer allowed by the permanent fund to collect a dividend. Is that the only people that this is going to apply to?
It will certainly only apply to the military members. Whether or not they had a gap in service or whether or not they had a change in residency, I'm not sure the Permanent Fund Division is going to know that. The intent is for somebody who was was an Alaskan at the time of induction, has served in the military as a career for the entire, one would assume, the entire duration, but it allows the amendment, the purpose of the amendment is to simply allow a certain amount of leeway on the Permanent Fund Division's staff. In the case of C1 and C2, being able to prove where you were 20 years ago can be somewhat problematic, and the division does not have that information because it was not required on permanent fund applications at that time.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. My concern is that we are saying that we are opening a loophole here where we can say, well, if you collected three permanent fund dividends, went in the military, maybe you collected one or two, then you change your state of residency. You quit getting permanent fund dividends because you were no longer a resident. Mm-hmm. Then here we're extending this so that now you can go back to 2009 and say, I reestablished my residency, and now even though no one else can become a non-resident, a legal non-resident, disqualified from receiving a permanent fund dividend, does this open a gap so that then someone can reestablish their residency without coming back to the state and remaining for a year when they had at some point in that process officially changed their residency?
Michael Pascal for the record. Representative Seaton through the chair. If you look at the first two lines of the bill, it addresses continual eligibility for the PFD. You have to receive it for 10 years.
Okay, so so then the effect of the amendment is that it does not change that the limited circumstances that this would apply to are those that received their 10 years and the permanent fund dividend division disqualified them from receiving further dividends because they had limited out on the 10 year.
Representative Seaton through the chair, correct. It's the, only the individuals who limited out on the 10 year. That's the intent of the bill, and as far as we're aware, that's the wording that's in the bill from legal. That was the only intention.
Thank you, Representative Keller.
Yeah, I would like to change my conceptual amendment and make it.
Is there an amendment on the floor now?
Yeah, D2 is.
Okay, so we're going to make an amendment to the amendment?
Yes, if I could, see there's an objection to it. And that's on line 5 there of D2. Instead of waive the, so delete the waive the. And insert adopt regulations to establish methods of alternative compliance.
Okay.
With the requirements, that it continues.
You want to speak to that? Why?
It just seems real to make it real tight, and that way it's public process is out on the table. I think Representative Grunberg is right. If we leave this loose, I think it might cause more problems than we want to cause.
Could you state that one more time?
State one more time. Page on line 5, delete at the end of that line, waive the, and insert, adopt regulations to establish alternative compliance determination.
We got that okay over there?
And it's conceptual, and I think that will cover it for legal services.
Okay.
Just a clarification.
Go ahead.
Adopt regulations to establish what?
Alternative methods of determination, and it would read to the requirement of those paragraphs.
Methods. Alternative methods of?
Compliance.
Of?
with the requirements of those paragraphs.
May I make a suggestion, please?
Representative Grunberg.
I would suggest that we say adopt regulations to establish, and then we can simply say I think that we could accomplish what you'd like to do, Representative, by just eliminating the word waive. Take that one word out and putting in the phrase, adopt regulations to establish. And then it would be the requirements of those paragraphs.
that covers it. That actually is cleaner. Okay. Yes.
So if I may,
let me restate the thing. Start over, scratch line 5, delete the word waive toward the end, and insert adopt regulations to establish. That'll do it.
Okay. Any objection to the amendment to the amendment? If not, the amendment to the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I remove my objection to amendment 2.
Okay. Okay, without further objection, amendment 2 passes. Now we go to the main bill. Any Representative Seaton?
Mr. Chairman, at our last meeting, I asked for a legal opinion on the discrimination between the length of residencies of a 3-year residency requirement versus a 1-year residency requirement. And I haven't seen that. Do you have that for us? This, Mr. Chairman, relates to the Zobel case where it threw that wide open because it was illegal to have discrimination on the basis of longevity of residency, and it seems like requiring 3 weeks.
For the record, Michael Pascal, Representative Seaton, through the chair. We did obtain that. I thought we had provided that, but I could be in error. Their synopsis of that is it could be.
Say what?
Their synopsis of that is it could be.
Could be a legal problem.
It could be.
Yeah.
But what do we do?
There's no definitive answer.
And, Mr. Chairman, my problem with the bill is I think it runs directly to the point of the case that overturned the longevity bonus, the original longevity bonus, and we are establishing something on exactly the same basis that was overturned by the Supreme Court, and we're trying to do it here. We're trying to say that if you were a longer-term resident before you went into the service, you get this 20-year benefit. If you were a 1-year resident before you went into the service, you don't get it. And it seems to me that we are directly trying to, we don't like the decision by the Supreme Court, and we're directly trying to overturn it. So, you know, I know it frustrates people that we can't make those decisions sometimes that are, have already been declared unconstitutional, but I don't think we should pass this bill for that reason, for one, and for the other reason that with the data that we have that shows that residents that are gone for a long period of time, 10 years, return in very low numbers, that a extended duration does not give us a adequate proxy for physical residency. It puts the permanent fund itself at risk of being declared taxable by the IRS. And so I think that we are on very shaky ground as far as the risk that we are willing to take to say that people can take a career and spend 20 years out of the state and still receive their permanent fund dividend. That's that extension could be extremely costly to all of the citizens of the state. So.
Any comments from the sponsor? And then we'll go to Representative Keller.
Representative Seaton through.
Johansson.
Johansson. I don't know why I'm doing that, Abel. Representative Johansson, we're going to hear from the sponsor. And then we'll go to Representative Johansson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton through the chair. There is a representative of the Department of Law here that could probably address your first question. As to your second question about the number of returnees, the number is for 2 to 5 years of absence is 19, for 6 to 10 is 15, for 11 to 19 is 30, and for 20-plus years is 16. And those are members that are in the armed forces that had a 10-year absence. So those are the numbers that the PFA
Thank you. Division. I'll get the Department of Law up here. In the meantime, Representative Johansson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I remember the request for the opinion. I don't know, was it from the Department of Law, from Legislative Legal?
We received, Representative Johansson, through the chair, we received an interpretation from Leg Legal.
follow-up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow-up.
When did you receive this?
It's been several weeks. It was in March. I thought we had provided it. I apologize in error if we had not.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate what the sponsor is trying to do, but absent my personal reading and interpretation of the legal opinion, it's iffy. It's not really, with all due respect, good enough for me. What is the trail of this bill? Does it go to the Judiciary Committee or Finance, or what's the next stop in this, itinerary? Because, Mr. Chairman, if I might, it is a very big question, and I like to go out of my way to try and help the military people, but, I mean, at the expense of Zobel and the entire permanent fund, that is a very, very dangerous area to be fiddling around with. And I need to read the – I'm willing to let the bill go, but if it gets to the floor and I don't have answers, I'm going to have some real difficulty wading into that very, very delicate area of permanent fund and its tax status.
Let me go to the Department of Law, please. Please introduce yourself, sir, and you've heard this interesting discussion.
I have, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Branch. I'm with the Department of Law here in Juneau. Would you like me just to start?
Yeah, just make whatever comments you'd like to make in response to what you've heard here.
I think the committee already has a sense of the problem. If you're going to make an exception for somebody, you create a classification. If you're the government, you do that. You create a constitutional question about whether you're going to be violating the protection rights of the people who won't benefit from this exception. There's also a question about whether you're violating the constitutional rights of people to travel and the Privileges and Immunities Clause. All those issues were discussed by the United States Supreme Court in the Zobel case, which struck down the first permanent fund bill. As you probably remember, that bill awarded length of residency by increasing the amount of a dividend by the number of years a person was a resident prior to application. And so that created, clarified the legal test here, which is this provision going to serve the purpose of making sure that residents of Alaska get the bill? And then distinguishing between those and non-residents when it comes to awarding the permanent fund. So you have a situation here where, like in Zobel, you're essentially awarding someone for their prior, residency in the state that's left the state. And so that raises a really big red flag. We at the Department of Law don't like to give ammunition to anybody that wants to challenge a statute because we're the ones that defend it. So I sit here hesitantly. But on the other hand, I got to tell you the truth. It does raise a concern about whether this can withstand constitutionality. I don't agree with you, Mr. Chairman, on your opinion about lawyers. I think it takes more than five to get three different opinions,
we don't all agree with him either.
But the point I'm trying to make is that...
Remember, you have a bill before the committee there.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry to be facetious, but the point I'm trying to make is that, all you can do when you're trying to decide if a bill is going to be constitutional or not is to try to measure what risk is it? How hard is it going to be to defend? This is probably one of the toughest ones we'd have to defend because of the Zobel connection. And most of the time we're, these exceptions that are made to the allowable absence rules from time to time, they always create some kind of a question. Is that going to make it unconstitutional because the people that don't qualify in this new exception, are they being treated unfairly? Alaska Supreme Court's given us quite a bit of leeway and given you quite a bit of leeway for this particular program, but this would be one that would be kind of stepping into another realm. I have not seen the alleged legal analysis, but, I've seen a lot of their work, and they're very careful. They're not going to sit there and pronounce one way or the other. you know, constitutional or unconstitutional. I can't do that because I'm not sitting with a black robe on the fifth floor of the Anchorage courthouse. But all I can tell you is that it's a red flag for us.
Reverend Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You answered one of my questions is, have you seen the opinion now that it has been testified to in the committee? It is a public document, and I would urge you to look at it and at some point maybe give an opinion on that. And as an aside, if my dad, who was born here in Alaska in 1937, ever gets his hands on Zobel, there's going to be problems. He was not too happy with that case.
I understand that. I think there have been some significant questions raised here, and I don't know how we can get through this, either in this committee or a follow-on committee before we reach our scheduled adjournment. And so what I'd like to have everybody do is examine some of the things we've learned today in this hearing, and then at your pleasure, in January, we'll, if you wish, we'll try to get this on the agenda, you know, soon after we come back. Would that be satisfactory?
Mr. Chairman, if I could have him address the severability clause.
Again, please.
If I could have him address the severability clause that's written into the bill, just because of this.
I think there is a provision in the bill, Section 2, that would sever any allow a court to sever any provision of the bill that would be found unconstitutional and save what the balance of it would be.
Good. And hopefully you might be available when we come back in January to address some of these issues again and refresh our memory.
I will, although I have to tell you that Chris Pogue is the pro from Dover on this program. I haven't done permanent work for some time, but I'm sure the Department of Law will send you a qualified person one way or the other.
Okay, and we have Debbie Bitney might be available at that time. Representative Grunberg?
Mr. Branch, through the chair. I'm familiar with the Zobel case, of course. This 3 years, three dividends, is one attempt to cure a very unique problem that the bill is designed to address. And that is a problem of proof. How do you establish that a service person who's been absent for the state for a very long time is indeed an Alaska resident? And the way they attempted to do it in the bill was to tie it to the length of residency before they left. Two questions. Would that likely or more likely survive a constitutional challenge if there were some very specific legislative findings addressing this very unusual problem we have and the unusual solution here? Or number two, whether there would be any other constitutionally permissible way rather than the three dividend requirement to constitutionally establish bona fide residency. Because it seems to me, and Representative Feige, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's not so much the three dividends that we're concerned about. It's to establish the ties to the state to make certain that that person had some bona fides. And I think that's what is we're getting at here. Before Mr. Branch answers that, am I correctly stating your goal here, Mr. Feige, Representative?
Representative Grimmer, through the chair, absolutely, yes.
With that, could you answer my questions, if permissible, by the chair?
Well, we're going to have to bring this to a close here.
Oh, I see. Yes, sir. Sure.
There's a clock up there.
I wonder if you could quickly answer it.
Representative, somebody answer that.
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. You know, findings are always helpful, but the court first looks at the language itself to determine whether there's a constitutional problem. So, I don't think that would solve the problem.
Okay.
I think that the, as I understand it, Representative Feige, as a sponsor of the bill, wants to do something is, I mean, he's not trying to violate the Constitution. He's trying to come up with a way to allow these people to continue to get the permanent fund on the understanding that they're continuing and wish to be considered Alaska residents. So
right.
If you could target on a front end and figure out a way to go that way so that somehow they are able to.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may, one thing. We could have something in there that they have to swear under penalty of perjury or something that they intend to come back to front load it, to do it in the front way.
That may already be a part of the application process, but I think, you know, looking for some objective standards that would be a lot usable to establish that, you know, you could look at them and their application and say, yes, these people are, we feel comfortable that they are Alaska residents and they will come back when their service.
We're going to have to halt at this time. At your pleasure, we'll try to get this back on the agenda as soon as we can. After we get back in January. Well, thank you for bringing the bill forward. I'm a retiree myself. I was not from Alaska when I was in the military, so it does not apply to me at all. I'd like to make that caveat. And with that, this will likely be the last meeting of the State Affairs Committee unless something extraordinary happens. I never make predictions. I'd like to thank for this session. I'd like to thank the House State Affairs Committee, our good folks over there who keep track of what we're trying to do here, and various staffs involved. It's been a very good session, and I thank you very much. We are adjourned.